one day we'd have to, we'd shut the plant down and everybody would go for a picnic, right? And all the workers loved that. And I don't know, is Simeon Park still around?
Oh yeah. Simeon Park is, I should state that was an outdoor park, right?
Yeah.
For we built a nice clubhouse.
Yeah.
Great facilities. We have swimming pool. We had soccer fields, baseball fields, tennis courts.
It was nice that, like, I had to kind of make sure all the inventory was ready so we could shut down for a day and didn't miss a shipment. So we would all prepare for that. And then, but Bruno was really good. Bruno Gas was real high.
But part of the Simeon Park, it, you know, a lot of working class families got no swimming pools, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so they could go there with the kids and there was a nice swimming pool, etc., right?
Yeah.
It was better than, call it the nature parks, which Ontario has, right?
Yeah.
There was a lot more to be done and a lot more services, right? But
And anybody could go there, any employees at any time.
Yeah, any time, yeah.
Because I know my friend Matt used to take his two sons swimming there all the time.
Yeah.
It's in Stouffville, right? If I remember right, Stouffville. Now, is it owned by you or Magna now, that park? Do you still own the park?
No.
Magna owns the park?
I built the thing and the whole thing, and I just thought it's a nice gesture to for the working class to... they don't have to drive for hours up north or what, right? And they have great forests, great soccer fields, baseball fields, tennis courts, swimming pool.
You're a very different kind of man, you know?
Yeah.
Not many people think about that stuff. And here I am, you know, we would get together at the picnic. And I miss that because everybody got a chance for one day to kind of get outside work and enjoy the life a bit, right? And I haven't had a picnic. I haven't been working for a few years, but...
How many years were you with Maple?
I wasn't with Maple. I was working with Olive Cosma to implement the system for 20 years. From 1998 to 2018.
Oh, yeah.
Then I went back to the software company. That's where I am right now.
Yeah.
And we still service Magna quite a bit. We have over 40 plants that run the software.
Yeah? So, what do you say you remember the most about Magna?
I'm trying to put it like a specific thing. Like, Simeon Park would be a specific thing that I remember.
Yeah.
But I think if I look at them all, like the one-on-one, what was it called, face-to-face, that we would have, right? I think what's missing today that was there before is gratitude. Gratitude from the top down, right? It just doesn't feel like the gratitude for the workers like is there anymore. It's like I'm employee number 305 and that's who I am. I'm not Gary Flynn to the upper people. I'm just an employee number, right? And I never felt that way. And I'm not just saying it because you're Frank Stronach. I'm saying it because that's the way it felt. Yeah. It felt that way. Everyone talks about it before I left, how it was like almost a family, brothers, sisters, father. You know, you had somehow, whatever you did, Frank, you made the workers feel they were part of your family. And now, as I said to you, it just feels like the color of the wall is more important than the people, right? And I think you said it earlier that, you said, well, what is it like now? What did I like when you were there? And it was very much, your generation, Frank, like a people and yourself obviously included, is that you guys, I don't know what would happen today if there was a war and our youth had to go to war. Like, I think of my grandfather, he had to fight in the war. And conscription, is it called, right, when you get drafted?
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't imagine if conscription came in today and the young people were forced to fight for freedom, right? I just don't think it would. I mean, I think they would all run, you know. I'm not knocking them. I'm just saying, like, it's just a different. We had a tougher life. You said when I first met you, you had no food on the table, right? My father came from New Brunswick here with 25 cents in his pocket. So there's a real, real appreciation for what you've grown when you went from nothing to something, right?
Well, it's, if you never experience hunger, hunger not because you want to lose weight, hunger because you got no money to buy food, huh?
Yeah.
That leaves a very deep impression, huh?
Absolutely.
And that's why you kind of I feel for that certain things has to be done.
Yeah.
That we ignore it, right? And the very, I try to analyze the world. What's the problem of the world, right?
Yeah.
The problem is the very rich don't want to share the profits with the workers, huh?
Yeah.
So that's why I'm so. My mission is to really do to create an economic charter of rights. I would like to see that Canada is the first country in the world which will adopt an economic charter of rights. Because basically I'm saying the human charter of rights alone is not sufficient. We have to fortify it with an economic charter of rights. Economic charters of rights will lead to economic democracies, and economic democracies are the basis for democracy itself. Let's take a kid in inner city Detroit, right? The human charter has no bearing, none whatsoever. No. All the kid knows is free to be hungry.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So the very thing is that I'm indicating that if the economy doesn't work, nothing else will work, huh?
Yeah.
Because you cannot feed the hungry, you cannot look after the most fragile people, the elderly, the sick, the handicapped. So it's the economy, it's the most important subject to talk about, and we totally ignore it, right? The economy is driven by three forces: smart managers, hardworking employees, and investors. And all three have a right to the outcome, which is profits. Okay, the message I want to get across loud and clear is, without workers you can't make a profit. So it's only fair, smart, if you let them participate, right, in profit sharing.
Yeah, then they have a vested interest in.
Yeah, they have, they're on the front line, you know, they can see how can we make things better. It's got to be tangible, right? Because workers know if you just have a gimmick, right? Okay, they know, right? And so it's, so the very key is, if you let them participate, you release an energy of undue proportions, okay? Because they're on the front line, they know how to make things better, right? Okay, I always like to see at lunchtime, when they had lunchtime, they looked at the financial paper, how the stock price was, etc., right? It was always interesting to see.
I remember when I got my first profit sharing check. In 1991, around there, and I think it was the cash portion was $24, right?
Uh-huh.
And I think the share bought enough shares for, I think it was $200 or $300, right?
Yeah.
But the shares were down to like $1.48. That's what they were.
Yeah.
They were, right? And then by 1994, they had gone up to $120. This is before they split, you know, way back then, right? Yeah. And people said, "Oh, that's not much money you got back then. You got $120. I said, "Yeah, but think about it. I got $1.49 of shares that grew to $120 a share. So you don't have any idea what you're talking about, right?"
You get 10 shares or 100 shares, right?
Yeah, it was, the growth has been phenomenal.
No, we had to, about one-third of our labor force was women, right? And we had a lot of women operating punch presses, and some of the women had maybe $300,000-$400,000 worth of shares, and yeah. then they had the trust.
Yeah, that's yeah. Okay. No, obviously that was a good time. Is that it was too bad it wasn't like that still in some ways, but I remember a lot of that stuff. You know, I think I still have my paycheck. My profit sharing stub in my drawer. I keep a lot of stuff, you know. My wife thinks I'm a little crazy, but
so it's a very modern plant, right?
Oh, okay.
The interesting was when they had the 100-year celebration, right? The factory is 100 years old.
Okay.
And I bought it about 2-3 years before. It was a government owned plant, right?
Okay,
so I remember when I addressed the workers and they were the public and everything here, I've always said, as a kid, my dream was always they made bicycles, right? Mm-hmm. That they made famous bicycles. As a kid, it was always my dream to have my own bike. I had to share a bicycle with my sister. And she always was a little smarter, a little faster, so she always got away first.
That's a good story.
So it was interesting that I said, look, I always now I own the factory, right, with the cars, with everything.
Yeah. That's now is that plant is BMW plant or Magna?
No, a Magna plant.
Magna plant.
But we made the BMW Jeep there, huh?
I thought you made the Z4 there.
Yeah, we made that too.
Just to make this,
yeah, and then we actually, the last number of years, we made the English car.
Aston Martin.
We made the Aston Martin
there.
We shipped the four-seater, right? The Aston Martin, right from our factories to the showroom. And we made the Mini Coopers, huh? We shipped the Mini Coopers all over the world. It was the only factory in the world which made Mini Coopers. We had that, right?
I just saw an article that said that Mini Cooper is one of the most reliable vehicles, one below Lexus. And I'm surprised, and now I know why.
Yeah,
so
no, we had a great labor force there, right? Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
They bust people, I think, from Slovenia, a lot of the workers.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. Yeah, so we are, Slovenia is a neighboring state, right? Yeah. So what else? I guess you guys were aware we had a hotline.
Yes.
Yeah,
that people could call a hotline and complain if something wasn't right. Because when I put the hotline in, the managers were upset at me. They said, Frank, what you're doing, you're spying on us. Okay,
yeah,
and I said no, but now they say when I talk years later, that's the best thing he ever did because we could flush out things which weren't right, huh?
Yeah,
because you can only grow a company if you have happy employees, huh? Otherwise you cannot grow, you cannot have growth, huh? And every day I went to work, I always asked myself, what do I have to do that workers respect me?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, do you think...
And I still do when I saw you guys come in. I reinvest the monies I had, I reinvest it, and call it the new company now is called Stronach International.
Okay.
But the interesting part is, I'm always interested, how can society function better, huh?
Yeah.
I came to the conclusion, or what the experience showed me, that family companies now, after one or two generations, they fall apart, huh? Because they got grandchildren, they get married, and then who's getting what, the lawyers get involved, and you're all over the map, huh? Okay. So I said I want to do something different. So what I have is, I'm the only shareholder, you see, so I can make all the decisions, but I gave the decision making to a board. Okay, so actually I can do a few little things yet, but not much. So the board makes the decision, and I allocated 15% of the profits go to my grandchildren, because I got three grandchildren, so 5% each. My kids, I got two kids, they're quite rich, but in case they blow their money, there is some monies coming to the grandchildren, right? And the board can make decision where and how. So I have an updated magnet there, huh? Again, I decided what we do with the profits. 15% of the profits go to the family, 5% each, because I got three grandchildren. Then 20% goes to management and to the workers. 10% goes to charity. Magna only at 2%. Huh? This is 10% goes to charity, and the rest is reinvested. So the board can invest just about in anything. Huh?
How old are your grandchildren?
My grandchildren now is, I think the youngest is about 20.
Well, 20.
And I have one with about 28 and 30.
What are their names?
It's Selena is the youngest. Selena, it's a girl. Okay. Then it's Nikki.
Nikki. Okay.
She is about 28. And Frankie is my grandson. He's about 30.
Frank.
Yeah.
He's named after you.
Yeah.
That's nice. That's a nice.
Okay. Yeah. So it's it. So basically, the 55% which reinvestors flows actually to the Canadian public, huh?
Right. Yeah.
No, okay.
So
it's another way that my thing is always, how can we serve society, huh? I mean, if always, I used to give a lot of lectures in your universities, and I always told the students, the success of life can only be measured the degree of happiness you reach. But I said to the students, but let me tell you from my experience, it's a lot easier to be happy if you got some monies. The smart students always ask, well, how can we make some monies? So I said to them, listen, you guys and girls, barely 20s or a little over 20, you don't know yourself. Experiment a bit. Do something what you enjoy. When you enjoy something, you're going to be very good. If you put in the extra effort, you could be one of the best, whatever you do, a woman or a man, right? If you be one of the best, money is a byproduct. And I always said, look, you have a right to utilize the knowledge which you accumulate in the universities for your personal use. But be thankful to your parents, that your parents worked hard, that you could go to university. And they said, look, you got the right to utilize that knowledge you have accumulated for your own personal use. But I said, don't you ever forget, a portion of that knowledge or money's gotta flow back to society, huh? Okay, because so the real thing is, I've always said that, always knew that the world has always been dominated by the golden rule. Where's the gold makes the rule, or where's the money? I mean, centuries ago, you could see the king up the hill, right? When he taxed the farmers too much, he had revolutions. But you don't see the kings no more. They might be in Hawaii, they might be in Beverly Hills, they might be in Monaco, but they're there, okay? Because when you think, just the interest payments alone, what Canada has to pay to the debt holders, you know, to the debt, is about $150 million a day. Who's getting all those monies, huh? Okay.
$150 million,
yeah. Who's getting
a day.
Yeah, because we have what, close to about 2 trillion, you know, look at the amount what we have to pay back, huh?
Yeah, that's okay. Just, so you can all feed a lot of people, hey?
Yeah, but you feed, you know, we could build 3 or 4 hospitals every day, right?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Or what, too many other things, right?
Yeah.
It's just what a shame, right?
Yeah.
But again, you have a lot of rich people, and they don't, and we've always been dominated by the rich people. And so the statements I make, you know, how can we dismantle the chains of dominations? Not via violent revolutions, but by a revolution of the mind. No destructive revolutions, by a revolution of the mind. And that is to create economic charters. The human charter of rights alone is not sufficient. We have to fortify it with an economic charter of rights. Put it in other terms too, it's a shame that so few people are economically free. You see, if you're not economically free, you're not really a free person.
No, that's true.
And look, should it be that difficult? I'm saying, if a person works for 30 years, you should have saved maybe that you own a house, a small house or a condo, and you should have maybe at least $100,000 in the bank that you could supplement your old age pension.
Yeah.
And choose a road to happiness, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a shame. Instead, our seniors have worries.
Okay? Absolutely.
It's a shame, right? So I think economic charters of rights is crucial. I think it should be grassroots.
Yeah.
Okay? And again, the timing has to be right, right? Timing means everything in life. If you do a new job, if you meet a girlfriend, whatever, right? Timing means everything.
Mm-hmm.
The timing is the fridge has got to be half empty. People got to be hurting, right? If the fridges are full, you can't bring them, and you shouldn't. That means,
yeah,
you know, if a society is well fed, then there's no reason to be, right?
Yeah.
So the fridge has got to be half empty, and you really need a constituency, right? And the constituency would be small business. Small business has always been the backbone of Canada.
Yeah.
If small business does well, the whole country will do well. So basically, I'd like to tell small business, you got to band together. You have so much red tape, you can't really move. If you band together, you can dismantle the red tape. And you as a small business shouldn't pay a business tax because you hardly make any money. You want to grow, you'd rather hire an employee before you pay tax. But we know governments do need tax monies, but they make more monies by hiring employees, and they pay a wage tax. Okay, so that's the key. Huh? Imagine there's about 100 million small businesses. If they hire 2 people, right, you get 2 million. I mean, we would create an economic boom again of unthought proportions, because they all will play on the same level playing field. And that idea, you know, came to a certain extent from Winston Churchill, because he, when he was the Prime Minister of England, he said, damn it, the Parliament doesn't work. There's only politicians. We need a chamber of citizens to balance out the politicians. In Canada's case, it would be small business. They should be the chamber of citizens, huh? Okay, so I'd like to see a small business chapter in every political riding. Right? Canada has 343 political ridings. They should have a board and they should interface with the public how important the economic charter would be. The economic charter would eliminate the poverty, because it's poverty which creates hate, creates crime, creates everything here, right? So we need a more balanced society, right? Where we teach people, right? Save a little to this or that, try to live healthy, right? Okay, so we're not teaching people how to have a reasonable life, because if we would teach people, then we cannot manipulate them, huh? It's so, you know, it's so manipulated, right? Have you any question how that economic chart and how are you? Okay,
I've seen like a lot of different perspectives of what happens to somebody, and I don't mean to go on about it, but I do have the experience that what life can be like when you're something traumatic happens to you, right? And one of the things that I wish if I could change in the country or the world is when this happened to me, my medication is very expensive. It's just a fact, right? There's a lot of people worse than me, right? So my medication is like 25 grand a year, right? So, you know, you work for a company for 30 years. I worked for Magna, but Magna, every company does this the same. So after 2 years of disability, my benefits were cut off, right? So I was on my own, you know, and the government helped a lot, and I thank them for that. But you see, I think when something happens to a long-term employee who's put most of their life into a company and supporting it and working for it, like you said, hardworking, and something happens to them, that's not their fault, it's just life, right? And that person needs, in their difficult tribulation of darkness they're in, they need some help, right? And I don't understand why Magna would have cut my benefits from me. It's not you, I'm just saying, like,
yeah.
Like I understand, okay, if I just started for Magna and I'm 1 year and this happens, okay, you can't have everybody. But I mean, for the long-term people who've been getting older, like, it's hard to look back now and say, am I Gary Flynn or am I now employee 305?
Yeah.
And people would joke and say, you're only a number to a company. You know, it's a joke, right? But when it actually happens to you and you are employee 305, because I'm now an employee, but because of what happened to me, they put me as inactive. So I'm employee of Magna still. They haven't fired me or anything, but they cut my benefits. And I said, well, I don't mean to complain. I'm not complaining. I have a lot of gratitude for what happened to me. I'm alive. I got my family. But see, these are moral things, right? And An employee who's been there a long time, you know, when they need that, to cut them off like that is immoral to me, right?
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know how many disabled people there are in the company. I have no idea, but it hurts because you put your life into something, right?
Yeah.
And I know I feel like I'm complaining. I'm really not trying to complain.
No. But it's a good point you made. For instance, if this would have happened 30 years ago when I had been here, I say, Jerry, we got to do something about because I put in a rule that we have to hire handicapped people, huh? Okay, a percentage has to be, huh? I think we could have easily set aside 2%, like we had 2% to charity, but in hindsight, our thing should have been, I think we could have, we made a few million profits, 2% with a few hundred million every year, which we, right? We could have also set up a fund when Magna employees get hurt, huh? That they get a subsidy, huh? So, but that is if, I guess when I run the thing here, I did not, you know, strange things happen, strange sicknesses, if no fault the thing, it happens, whatever, right? But that's one of the thing I know I would have done it, huh?
Okay. So it's not funny because I wrote a letter to, what's the guy running back now?
Was it
the guy who was in charge of Magna? Swami. So I wrote.
What's
Swami?
No, it's before Swami.
Don.
Don Walker.
No, after Don. This is the guy now. Swami.
Swami. Yeah.
So I wrote a letter and I just said, you know, just because things are the way they are, doesn't mean we can't try to do something better, right? And I just said, you know, maybe Magna could be the first company that says, okay, if you've been with the company for whatever, 25, whatever years you determine, and something happens to you, I mean, thank God that Sun Life was providing LTD. So I thank Magna for that. That helped me out a lot, right? But if there was just to say something, if you're a long-term employee and you go through CPP disability, the resources are already in place to approve whether you're sick enough. So if you try to scam the government, they're already checking for that to make sure you're not faking your illness, so to speak, right? Yeah. So you don't have to spend any more money there. So somebody goes through that process 2 years now, and now they're going to be cut off for their benefits. I even offered to pay my benefits, Frank. I said, I'll pay my own. Just can you keep me under the group rate? Because I need that medication. I need that stuff now to live, right? But they wouldn't let me do it.
But,
and it's just something has to change there for people.
People want to see loyalty, huh?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
If somebody's thing here. And maybe I've done a lot of loyalty, but for instance, that I've missed, huh? Okay, I've missed that because I'm sure if I would have been, I would have put in a program, right? Okay.
Okay, I know I interrupt you a lot, but so on that point, I know in my heart today.
Yeah.
If you were still around and this happened to me, that me and you could sit and talk, and I know you'd be open to changing to make things better.
Yeah.
But there's so much bureaucracy now, no one wants to listen to you, right? Who's Gary Flint? He wrote this letter. I don't want to listen to the guy, right? But I know that a guy like you who built with his hands, he would sit down and talk about it and actually listen, not, you know. So that's my, just for you to say that, don't take the blame on you, Frank.
No, but it's a constant process. How can we improve the living standards of people, right?
Yeah.
And people would appreciate loyalty, right? They know, 100%. Look, working for X years, and now I have an accident happen. Is there a thing here, right? We could have, in hindsight, we could have done it easily, right? Because I would have said we'd done 2% for charity, right? Which we gave away a few hundred million every year, right?
Yeah, no,
but yeah, but in hindsight, I will put in a program like that at Stronach International, right? Because I still can mold it, huh? That I would say I have allocated 10% of the profits towards charity, right? Okay. But I could add another easily 2% and said that is a fund where if somebody has a handicap or a sickness that we could supplement the drugs or whatever is required, huh?
It's music to my ears. You know, all the time I thought, how could Gary Flynn change this for people who are even worse off than me? I mean, I'm lucky I had some profit sharing to rely on to help me through, right? But what about somebody who's got nothing, right?
You see, that is... money has no heart and no soul, huh?
No, it doesn't. Okay.
And so public companies, which, you know, where the shells out there, right, they want to see dividends, dividends, dividends. Huh? Mm. But I, you know, I had control of Magna, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. And when there was a shareholders meeting, you know, somebody complained about, they said, look, how come we give 2% away? That was maybe 300-400 million every year. They, you know, they say, look, that should go to the shareholders. Okay, so I said, look,
if you were in charge.
I said, look, if you don't like the way I run it, why don't you sell your shares? Buy somebody else's shares, right?
Yeah.
Okay, but in hindsight, I should have put, the one thing I regret, right, that instead of profit sharing 10%, that it wouldn't be higher, 15 or 20%, or at least have a small percentage, an emergency fund, if people have accidents or sicknesses, that it would be a thing there, right?
Yeah,
and I will. I'm fine-tuning the call it the corporate constitution, and I will that. And whatever I do is open to the public, right? I'll give you a copy of that. That will be in. That will be a thing.
You know what?
Okay.
You know what? I have to say that I'm actually glad somebody's listening to this and taking it to heart, because I mean, if somehow, some way, this little conversation we're having here turns out to be a bigger change for people who can't put food on their table because they can't even work anymore, right?
Yeah.
And I'm just kind of, I wanted to be an advocate for those kind of people, right? I mean, I'm a lucky man that I'm still putting food on my table, but there are a lot of people who cannot do that,
and they
can't even work, right?
Okay, I had the 2%, but we really, a company should be known that it's loyal to its employees. Huh?
Yeah, that's the
and,
big thing.
And I miss that, huh? Okay, as I said, you know, the last 5, 6, 7 years, I became a better... I had a better understanding for society, huh? Because I was being very critical, because I was on the board of universities, okay, about 7 or 8, and I'd done my thing like a regular director would do. But the interesting part was, universities got great faculties in medicine, great faculties, technology, great faculties for the arts, but hardly any faculties in regards to humanity, okay? And so basically what I'm trying to teach or try to get incorporated, universities would be the ideal places to explore which structures do we need which would lead to an ideal society. Okay, because we got no blueprint.
Yeah,
absolute no. When you build a house, you wouldn't build a house without a blueprint, right? The most important thing for society, humanity, it's practically, we don't talk about it. We don't talk about it, you know, what structure would it be, huh? Okay, so anyway, I feel very fortunate that that my thinking process is always exploring what do we miss? Can we do something better?
That's amazing.
So I think again, I learned the segment which I missed. I could have done it relative easy, because I had control over the company. It would have been relative thing here to say, look, I want to allocate 2% of the profits for if employees have a mishap. But so it's not delayed. I can do it in Stronach International, right?
Yeah, that truly is very means a lot to me, because Somebody's listening, right? Not everybody wants to listen.
But that's why I've always said life is a question of fate and circumstances, being at the right place at the right time with the right ingredients, right? If we, you know, to me, that is another, call it, learning stone, right? I thought it'd be a thing here, but now mine said, I did miss an important aspect, the loyalty factors to when an employee has a mishap, the other employees, can they help, right? And we could have, okay? But anyway, it's great that we just met by accident.
After I know, it's funny. Long, yeah. It's funny, the world, like, I mean, again, I'm Catholic, right? So it's going to come up a lot. It's just my way, right? So, this wasn't an accident, right? This is, everything has, not by accident, it's by God, right? And me and you sitting here today, I don't know what to say, but this was not an accident. Why I was here with him that day, you walked in, you invited me for lunch, and I got to talk to you.
It was an accident guided by the right people.
Okay, there you go. That's a good way of putting
because
it.
Because many times I feel that way, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, it's just, that I've been, I'm not overly religious, but I'm religious in a way, huh? Many times I go, by my house, behind there's a big forest. I go there, sit down on a stone or three stumps, and count my blessings and say how great life has been to me, and what do I miss? What else can I be helpful to make better? But I know the economic charter of rights will be eliminating,
Yeah.
Okay. It will lead that we can eliminate poverty, huh? Okay, and there should be no reason to have poverty, right?
That would make the big guy really happy if we could do that.
Yeah, I think we can do that, yeah.
Yeah.
So great that, so it was a meeting guided by unforeseen forces. That's
unforeseen forces guided us indeed.
And
I was real.
Okay, and my saying to people is always, especially to young people, focus on today to stay alive, but leave the door open for tomorrow. Follow your dreams and be guided by your conscience.
That's very wise words, Frank. Very wise words.